Gabbert in the shotgun, four wide. There's the shotgun snap. With time, he'll turn and throw, and he's got a man. He's on the run. Look at him go. There goes Cecil Shorts. He's going. He's in the 20, the 15, 10, 5, and he's reaching. Touchdown. Touchdown, Jacksonville. 80 yards. 80 yards. Oh, my, 80 yards. No timeouts. Down five. Pressure coming. Gabbert plants, turns, and he's going for the whole ball of wax, and he's got Cecil Shorts. Shorts catches it. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Oh, my goodness. What a catch by Cecil Shorts.
You are amazing, Cecil Shorts. What a catch.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and John Osher.
All right, welcome in everybody to Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Did it make you yesterday long for the good old days of Gabbert to Shorts?
No, it did not really do that. But,
fortunately, not nothing could probably.
Yeah, we have a rotation on this show, Mike Dempsey. I don't know if you realize that we have a rotation.
Do tell.
You know what I'm doing today? I'm drawing the short straw.
Is that right? Is that the short straw?
This is the short straw.
Or is it actually
getting to come in today? It's tough.
Is it the long straw? Because look, we kind of have a feeling how this show is going to go today.
Sure.
There's going to be a lot of impassioned fans, and look, it's understandable.
Which
John.
There should be.
I think the most several things are disheartening. What the most is doesn't really matter because they're all disheartening. You lose in this fashion, which was very similar to the way the entire first half of last year felt. Mm-hmm. After an offseason, another year of building, you knew you weren't going to be, at least you felt like you weren't going to be 11-5 this year, but you felt like you were going to be competitive almost week in, week out. And you'd have some key building blocks to kind of hang your hat on and say, these are the guys that, no matter what, look at that nucleus, man, and they're only going to get better together. Right now, you look and you say, what are the building blocks of this team? And I know on paper we could list them.
No, I know.
But who's playing up to building block status on this football team?
Well, you know, you thought after the opener, I thought a lot of the storylines from the offseason still held pretty close to true. I mean, but yesterday, I can't sit there and say any part of the team played well yesterday. So if you're asking me, is there a building block from yesterday that you're like,
not
hey,
necessarily
hey, let's
even
go.
From yesterday, but if you look like Luke Jokel.
Right.
What is he right now? What do we know about Luke? And I'm not trying to bury him. I'm not saying his career's over. I'm not saying anything like that. Guys who are much smarter than me, like Tony Boselli, when it comes to offensive line play, and will always be, tell me that he's got every tool in the book to be a really good player in this league. Is he close to being that?
He's one of five guys up front right now who are struggling.
Struggling. The entire unit is struggling.
Everyone, right. And it's hard after just that game, not having dug deep into the All-22 to know exactly how Luke Jokel played, what combinations there were with Zane Beatles, what went wrong. But as a group, 10 sacks, I'm not sure any of those guys are holding their heads real high this morning.
This was not the Seattle Seahawks that they played. This is the Washington Redskins, who had gone 315 days without a victory of their own, had lost 9 games in a row, lose their quarterback. And you can argue, because that debate had gone on in Washington, will they be better off with or without Kirk Cousins in there? Whatever. They lost their starting quarterback, who got all the practice reps all week long. They had already lost their young field-stretching tight end. They lost their dynamic wide receiver very early in the game. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, Pierre Garçon, was almost invisible the entirety of the contest, and they made it a victory with ease. And that's, I mean, how in that circumstance, that
it looked too much like early last season.
It really
and
did.
And anybody would tell you that. And again, you know from experience, we've been in this chair long, and if you know from experience that teams lay eggs in the NFL. So what you hope is that this is one of those where you look back and go, oh gosh, what happening is, but this morning, it was bad. There's really not a whole lot to break down, except to say it was awful and it was unexpected, and I was surprised. I was surprised by it.
I was too. I mean, I didn't think they'd win the game, but I thought they'd struggle to match pace offensively, not to that degree. I mean, they started the game with 4 straight 3 and outs, not helped obviously by the big drop on the first series, and maybe goes for 6. And I'm not saying that changes the game, but it certainly changes the way the first half is played, and you know, you feel different about the football game and your chances. And
things like that can tilt the score. I mean, but I don't – and I think Chad was asked afterward, as was Gus, would that have changed things? And I always think of the old Sammy Baugh line from the 1940 NFL championship game when the Bears beat the Redskins 73-0. There was a huge play early where a guy lost the ball in the sun for the Redskins, and they asked Sammy afterward, "Hey, would that have changed things?" He goes, "Yeah, it would have been 73-7.
Yeah.
I mean, so
that may have been the case.
But still, for a young team like that, a momentum builder, it would have made the score, 21-14 at half, so it would have been different.
With you getting the ball to start the second half, feel a little bit different.
But it's so hard to say.
I'm not saying that would have turned the, no, I
And the you also got the feeling that, unfortunately, that if the score had been closer at any one point, the Redskins probably would have been able to score and pull away, because there just wasn't any sort of a feeling that the Jags defense got a foothold on the game, I guess is what, they never felt like they were in control. And neither side. I mean, it was awful. It just was.
Not a lot of positives. Not any positives really coming out of that yesterday, but we will share the aftermath here with you. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in on this Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. We'll talk about, we can sit here and say bad, 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 and we will to some degree, but also, where is their hope? What can we, see from this team that now you got to worry about the status this week, at least for this week, of Mercedes Lewis and Allen Hurns. Hopefully you get Cecil Shorts back soon, but this is a team that's not really presenting anyone that defensive coordinators need to game plan for anyway. And, you lose those guys out of the mix. I mean, it's more, you can't consistently go 5 yards at a time, 12 play drives down the field to put yourself in scoring position in the National Football League. Defenses are too good for that, to consistently do that. And right now the Jags don't have the game breakers that they need to make those chunk plays.
And I still think a huge deal is still not Toby Gerhart, 8 yards on 7 carries. And I'm not laying the blame at his feet, because the offensive line to me is always responsible for the running game.
Offensive line, probably the worst performance in team history.
Yeah, basically. I mean, so unless that bunch can at least get you to 2 or 3 yards a carry, which isn't asking a lot, but to get a little penetration, a little bit of a threat of the run. I thought a lot of yesterday went back to what we always talk about. You have to have at least the threat of the run, or else all defenses are going to do is blitz. They're going to rush the passer, and it becomes very difficult. If your pass blocking is poor as it did yesterday, and you can't run at all, then what's the defense going to respect? And then you're going to see a situation
and
like
what is the offensive coordinator going to do in that situation? What can he do?
It's hard to get the big plays if there's not a threat of the small plays. And yesterday there was no threat of the small plays. It started it all off.
He's John Osier from Jaguars.com. I'm Mike Dempsey. Fat Tony is here. Lauren Brooks is here as well. 641-1010. Phone lines open to you. You can also use that as the text line now on the show. 904-641-1010. You can text that number if you can't get through on the phones, and we'll read some of those a little bit later on. Today, we ask you a question I never envisioned asking you, maybe at any point this season, certainly not after week 2 on the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight. Have the last 6 quarters, the last 2 games, 75-10 over the last 6 quarters. Is your confidence shaken in the direction of this team, the front office and the coaching staff? Because I'm seeing that for the first time, some of those responses via email, social media, what have you. So we'll talk about that a little bit today as well. Welcome your calls. Where can they go from here? If you want to just kind of commiserate about yesterday, you're welcome to do that as well. But where can this team go from here to get it turned around? What are the bright spots? And have they made any progress, really, since the beginning of last year? Based on yesterday's result, you would probably say no. Maybe a day after is not the best time to take an objective look at that, but that's where we are right now. 641-1010, it's a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. Jaguars today rolling right now on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, True Teal. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Gnarls Barkley, everybody's favorite. Crazy. We were crazy to take the over on 4 wins in Vegas. Well, I'm trying to come up with a theme today. Crazy by
this
Gnarls
team
Barkley.
Is making me crazy.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Is that simple?
It's that simple.
They're making you crazy?
Yes.
I thought our fantasy game was making us crazy yesterday. By the way, if you wanted to be lost for a while on the injury report, I hope you were in my lineup or Lauren's lineup yesterday. My goodness.
I know. They're dropping like flies.
A.J. Green. You ran A.J. Green and Noshon at me.
Yep.
I countered with RG3 and Jamal Charles, and then I threw in a heap and helping of Marcus Colston with a big fat zero, just for good measure.
Yeah.
So Andrew Luck's going to slice me down from behind tonight, and I'm going to take the big L to Lauren Brooks, I have a feeling.
And I'm going to be very happy about it, because that's really about the only thing I have to be happy about after the weekend.
Yes, crazy. They're driving Lauren crazy. There you go, 641-1010 is the number. You okay over there? What's going on?
Well, we just saw the moment of glory.
And Mercedes is scoring over there.
Oh, I'm rewatching the game right now.
Fist pump over there from the Ozone.
There you go.
Playmaker. I mean, all kidding aside, what do they do at tight end now?
Right.
You know,
we
if Mercedes is out, well, high ankle
Clay
sprain,
Harbor's coming
at
back.
Least a week.
Oh, at least a week. If it's a true high ankle sprain, it's, I would think, three or four. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
You tell me. You got any answers?
I don't. I'm asking the
Help
Ozone.
Me out, Mike.
I'm asking the senior writer
Help
here.
Help me out, baby.
I just sit here and talk. I facilitate smart people like you coming in and joining us in the
Jets. Well, you would probably have to look on the waiver wire, which is not where you want to look.
And that's the thing I hear.
Or free agent,
Look, fans are fans, and I get they're emotional, and they
go out and get some guys.
But go get some guys.
Sure.
We got to replace. Anybody has to be better than the guys we have right now. That's
right.
What I heard a lot of yesterday. No, they don't have to be better than the guys you have right now.
Your team is your team.
You're right. And
better for us.
They're constantly looking. The pro personnel department is constantly evaluating what's available out there. And if there's a player out there, you'll see a waiver move, and you're always like, huh, that guy, they picked up somebody I never heard of. Yeah, that's available.
What it is.
That's what you got.
You're not going to replace Mercedes Lewis with...
Of course not. I'm not even saying... But even like offensive linemen. I mean, is it possible? Look, Cam Bradfield got pulled out of that game. He's already a backup. He got benched for Sam Young.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You know, you got Blanco coming in there in the second half. We got to try something different.
Sure.
And I get that. And I don't think any of those guys, you know, the guys getting replaced are indispensable. But... Unless there's something.
Well,
that's
by
an
theory,
upgrade.
They must be better in the Jaguars' mind anyway than the guy sitting in Utica.
Because they have him on the roster.
Right.
If they thought the guy in Utica was already better, they already have signed that
right.
guy.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, they can text the guy in Utica. They can get him here. But obviously, they don't want to. So.
Correct.
I mean, and that's not a satisfying answer to someone who is feeling rage on Sunday afternoon and Monday morning. But from their perspective, when they. They're sitting there trying to find answers. If they thought that the phone call to Utica would work, they'd probably make it.
Right. Well, and I think...
And it doesn't have to be Utica, Mike.
True. It could be Poughkeepsie, which is fine
right.
as well. I think people look at Dave Caldwell for the first time over the last couple weeks. And, you know, the first year was such a grace period for the entire regime. And now it's like, all right, well, wait a minute. Where has this roster gotten better? Where is the talent? And with that first half last week, boy, you would have thought you would have been a completely different tone. So it can turn around.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly that.
The thing that's tough is all off season, you sort of knew, and I kept saying this was, you know, people asking what the record was going to be, and I would say 500 is a very lofty goal. You know, 4 or 5 wins with more competitiveness over the course of the season, I thought could be an improvement, because the reality is there was a lot of areas that needed to be drafted and developed, and that's how you do the team, that you just can't do in 2 drafts. And that's that's an infuriating thing to hear, but that's the reality of what they're dealing with. I think the wide receivers they've drafted this year, I think this group's going to wind up being good. I think Blake Bortles is going to wind up being good. I think Jonathan Cyprian's going to wind up being good. I think Luke Jokel will get these early things worked out and wind up being good. But those are the levels of draft picks that have to come in and develop when a GM is drafting them. So it takes time. It's tough to have a Telvin Smith, a rookie 5th-round pick, come in and be a solid starting level player. And that's what's sort of expected sometimes when you talk about it in the offseason. It doesn't always translate to the field and during the season.
Right. Well, a lot of youth that you'd like to have that sprinkled in with a more veteran core, but bottom line is that the thing you said, the record, maybe that's a lofty goal. The competitiveness week in, week out should not
been
be
better.
A lofty
right,
goal.
Right. And again, I'm saying over the course of the season, if you see a bunch of games like yesterday, then obviously that's very unacceptable.
Well, we've even said
in the NFL, you're going to have these, but it's like you said during the break. The problem is they don't have the body of work to make you sure that you're not going to have more of these yet.
Right. Jeff pointed out last year the Packers lost to the Lions 40-10, which is a valid point. Then you realize, well, they also have Aaron Rodgers and all these guys who've done it before.
Right.
And you figure they'll bounce back. It's not like, can they do it? No, we know they can do it.
Right.
They didn't do it on that given Sunday. We said, look, 6-10.
You see games like this, and the thing is to go get it fixed and not happen again. There was a run of games like this last year. Now
the
task
of
is
the season
you
of these
can't
games.
Have a run of games like this this year.
Well, 6-10, fine. If in those 10 losses, like 8 of them are by single digits.
That's what
and
I
you're
said all
right,
season. Right.
Exactly.
And
well,
I thought last week was really a single digit type loss. I know they lost by 17, but I thought that game felt more like what we've been talking about all
I'll
season
give you that one.
As competitive.
I'll give you
last
that
week,
one.
But not yesterday.
Not yet. And
not
so
even
now
close.
Your margin, and that's the problem. If this had happened in week six and you've shown a
precisely.
More competitive team,
right.
But you've shown one half of competitive football, one half of very good football, and then
right.
one half of total collapse, and then basically 60 minutes of, from a fan perspective, did they bother to show up yesterday?
And that's, again, that's what's disturbing, and that's what can't happen again. And that's sort of where you thought the defensive approach was designed to not have the first and second quarter yesterday happen. And it happened. So that's what can't happen again.
All right, 641-1010. Let's go to the phones and get as many calls as we can now over the next 90 minutes or so. Jim, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you? Hi, Jim. All right, Jim not there. How about Dave? Dave, you there?
Jim didn't show up either.
Yeah, I'm here.
What's up?
I'm the first one who will always dump everything on Chad Henne's back. Always. But watching the game yesterday, it wasn't Chad's fault. The right side of that line was porous. And I mean, I don't know how else to describe it, but it was porous. We have no running game whatsoever. I mean, I don't think we topped over like 50 yards running, 60 yards on the ground, something like that.
Not
I mean,
even close to that.
How do you expect any quarterback? I mean, you could put Tom Brady out there, and if he can't stand up, he can't throw the ball. And
no one's sitting here. We're not crucifying Chad Henne this morning, and I think I understand your point. Probably a lot of people are clamoring for Blake, and I
for the
get
reasons
that as well.
He cites, Blake might be the best option. You and I have said that, but for the reasons that caller cited. It's difficult. I could see the coaching staff's point with not making a change because of the reasons he cited. I don't know
what quarterback
of
could
any
be successful in this environment.
Yesterday's, sure.
Right, could be more successful. I mean, the better quarterback
sure.
is going to be more successful. There's no question they're going to be more successful. But to what degree is the question? If you're under, because I don't know what the number is. I'd have to go back and rewatch every sack. And even then, you don't know what the
right.
quarterback is seeing out there. People, and I thought the boys this morning made a good point. You know, what do you want Henne to do in some of those circumstances? Force one into coverage? Somebody's
right.
not open?
There were a couple that I tried to watch, you know, looking up from my computer where you're trying to write during the game, that I tried to watch, okay, what should Chad throw here? And we're in the back, you know, the DC press box is in the end zone.
Correct.
So it's sometimes tough to get a vantage point from there. But there were times you watch and you say, okay, where is he going to throw? And they're jumping on routes, quick routes, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So by the time the rush gets there, there was nothing to develop. It wasn't like I'm sitting there going, oh, boy, he missed this guy over here. Now, a great quarterback may throw into that coverage and get the completion and loosen things up yet a bit. I don't think he's a great quarterback, but yesterday I'd be hard-pressed to point out a lot where I went, man, what was that play?
There were a couple of times he took his drop when his back foot hit the ground, he was getting crushed. Okay?
Right. There were a couple of times that wasn't true, too,
there
as you pointed
absolutely
out.
There were times when I felt like, you know what, you don't have to throw it in the coverage, you can throw it away. Throw it out of bounds, save the hit, save the loss of yardage. how many of those
and then
times.
And you're ripping him for being check down Chad.
I
know you're not.
But I wasn't. You know, but look, we understand he's in a place where he's going to get some criticism.
When you can't
regardless.
Get the running game going, it's very tough to get anything deep. When there's no time, it's just tough to do anything offensively.
Let's get John up here next on Jaguars Today. Hi, John. How are you?
Yeah. The whole point that we're missing here is we've got one problem that's been identified. We do not have an offensive line. If they had an offensive line, our running game, our passing game would improve. Now, would it be great? I don't know. But that's the bottom line. We've got to improve that offensive line.
Okay,
I couldn't have said it better.
I just don't know, and I think we've mentioned that. I don't think anybody's missing that point. I don't think anybody could watch that game yesterday and miss that point, but it may be that we're not emphasizing it enough for you. How do you make an offensive line better in season? I think that's extremely difficult to do. Quarterbacks can make their offensive line better to a degree. They can't make their offensive line run block better. However, they can get rid of the ball quicker. They can make better pre-snap reads. Mm-hmm. They can know where they're going with the football. They can move subtly in the pocket. There are a lot of things they can do to help their offensive linemen in pass sets. What do you do if you're not opening any holes in the running game and you're falling behind? I mean, it was just that snowball going downhill. You're falling behind. You're going three and out. You can't try to establish anything. First of all, it's not going anywhere. You're running into a brick wall. You're giving plays away.
Right.
And what? So you end up with 7 carries for your tailback. Chad Henne's your leading rusher. What do you have, 17 yards on 3 carries yesterday?
Something around there.
They had like 25 yards between the two of them. And, Henne scrambled for 12, picked up the first down for the Jags yesterday. That was half that yardage. So,
well, you're making me feel great.
I mean, what do you do? No, but that's the reality of the situation.
I asked Zane Beatles after the game. He was talking about the need to get better, obviously. Well, I said, can it happen quickly? He said, he thinks it can. You know, that it usually with offensive line play, it usually is one guy missing a block. If one guy holds the block, it works. So that's what you hope. But I can't sit here this morning and say that anything that happened yesterday makes you optimistic about it. But it's got to happen.
It has to happen.
Right.
You look at yesterday or last year, the halfway point. The low point was probably the 8th game against San Francisco in London. And then all of a sudden, that's when they turned it around. When they're getting handled the worst, but it's almost like saying, well, because it happened before, I really can't tell you why they were able to do that.
Right.
And I can't write you a formula for why it would turn around this time.
I think what disappointed Gus the most, I didn't get a chance to talk to him one-on-one, but during the press conference yesterday, the thing that struck me is when that team was good last year, and they were pretty good for 4 or 5 games coming out, but you got the feeling after each game that they had maxed out. Like, they were playing the best they could. It was 100% pulling in the same direction, focus, all that stuff. They didn't come close to maxing out yesterday, obviously. So that's still what this team has to do. They're still building talent. They still have to max out. They can't win when they perform at a 60% level. And
totally
I think that's
agree.
What disappointed players and coaches yesterday was that wasn't a max out game for them. And Gus said it's hard to play that way. He hopes they learn that you can't just talk about getting better. You can't just talk about that approach. You have to do it. And that was something he was very passionate about. You can't just talk about that. It has to be real for every guy. So that's the task this week.
Even if this team maxes out, doesn't guarantee them anything because they're still one of the least talented rosters in the league. Let's just be honest about it. That's just the facts from where they've come from to where they are now. You talk in terms of impact players, Pro Bowlers, guys you got a game plan for, all this stuff. But fans can live with they know they may not know exactly if you've maxed out, but they know if you played a competitive game.
We saw
it
in the second half of last season. There were a lot of games where you felt like, hey, this team's not very talented, but that was a good effort.
They're making plays.
5, 6, 7 times that happened last year.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen yesterday.
All right, let's take a break. 641-1010. More of your calls coming up. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
The 1010XL, 92.5 FM Jaguars Ticket Blitz. Call 633-2000 now. Come protect the bank.
3 receivers set. Hodman, the running back, to the left of Chad Henne, who stands in a shotgun. Straight drop, looking to his left. Now Chad's going to get sacked. That's on Chad. All the way back to the 18-yard line that time. Frank Kearse got him, the 310-pound backup nose guard. It'll be fourth down.
We just got to look at ourselves in the mirror and, you know, point our finger at our own self. Can't put it on anybody else. Individually, we need to get better. As a team, we need to get better. And it starts with, you know, you as an individual.
A lot of individuals need to make that leap for this football team.
Yeah, about 53 of them, I guess.
53
right?
of them,
what
I would think.
Depressing clip.
By my count. Well, look, I mean.
Between that one's on Chad and the backup nose guard with the sack.
That may be the right.
Oh,
that,
my goodness.
You know, the 310 backup pound backup nose guard just got one. I mean, they're all. By the way, Kerrigan is trying to make the Pro Bowl based on that game yesterday. What's he doing in the game?
Get him where you can get him, baby.
You know. In all honesty, is he going to do a Subway commercial with RG3 now,
that's
too?
Right. That's how you get paid, man. You go get those 4 or 5 sack games against the bad teams.
This being said, that Frank Frangie on the call, obviously, on the Jaguar Radio Network here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Chad Henne talking about every individual needs to look themselves in the eye or in the mirror and improve themselves. That's all you can do. And in reality, that's all. Chad Henne cannot make Allen Hurns better. He can make him better by putting the ball in a good spot for him to catch. I get those kind of things, but you know what I'm saying. Chad Henne cannot make Paul Posluszny better. Paul Posluszny cannot make Cam Bradfield better other than practicing against them. You know what I mean? Everyone's got to improve to a degree on their own, but that one's on Chad. You heard Jeff Loggeman say Pro Football Focus broke down, and they're not the sole arbiters. They don't know, I don't think, who everyone's responsibility is. And I'll defer to Loggeman watching the tape today and then talking with us tomorrow. But, Tony, give us the breakdown. Who did Pro Football Focus blame the sacks on yesterday?
Here's the breakdown. Somehow they got it at 11 instead of 10, so I assume they gave one sack to two different guys, responsibility
so
for that sack to two
okay,
different guys.
You.
So they have the total number at 11. But
it is hard to keep track.
Yes, it is.
Jokel
in the game gave up a sack, and according to them, he gave up a hit and a hurry. Those are three different categories for them. So that's three plays where he allowed the quarterback to be affected. Jock McClendon at center gave up a sack and a hurry. Will, the fullback, Taofu, or is that how you say it?
Close enough.
Was I close?
Wilty.
He gave up the sack in a hurry, and I remember that play. He got overpowered. They tried to block Brian Arakpo on a play inexplicably with him and Todman. I still don't understand what the plan was on that play. And then Chad Henne with two. They gave him credit for two of the sacks. Cam Bradfield gave up three sacks, a hit, and two hurries. So that's six plays that are on Bradfield.
That's why Sam Young was out there in the fourth quarter.
You ain't kidding. Brandon Linder gave up three sacks in the game. They also had Sam Young and his limited snaps giving up a hurry and Luke Bowenko giving up a hit and just hit one of his 14 snaps. But it's mostly the right side of that offensive line and Chad Henne that they give it to.
Which we knew, and I hope that Jeff Loggeman's analysis backs that up because for a couple of reasons. A, you want to believe that the money invested in Jokel and Beatles is well spent to some degree. And people have already, Beatles' biggest bust in the world, can't run the ball. I get that. This analysis says he wasn't directly responsible for any of those sacks yesterday. I saw him at times looking like he was wondering who of these four guys who are running past me should I block. I'm probably exaggerating the point, but you know what I'm saying. So, but they, after looking at it, blamed Linder and Bradfield as the biggest culprits here for a half dozen of them, and only Henne responsible for two.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to think, well, you're just trying to make excuses. We're just trying to tell you a fair picture of the landscape. It was nobody escapes blame yesterday, including Chad Henne.
It's so hard to, on a day where you give up 10 sacks, and it frankly looked chaotic. And trying to watch from the press box, it was hard to keep up with what was going on. So it's hard to exactly decipher, okay, this was 85%, this person's fault, 13%. But Cam Bradfield got benched at the end of the game, and it was clearly a problem that side of the line the whole game.
Rarely do linemen get benched in the midst of a game.
Right, and, you know, I don't know that at the end putting Bowenko in for McClendon was as much of a bench as it was, this is a kid we want to see, let's see if this works, let's see if this is... This is better, say, something going into it. I didn't get the feeling that the wheels were absolutely off for Jacques. specifically the way you felt on the right side of the offensive line.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. But I think then people, it's also fair to say, well, that young kid can get a little experience in the fourth quarter. What about the guy you drafted third overall? I mean, honestly, at that point,
a fair question.
I think that is a fair question. And, you know, Gus said he never really considered making that move in the game. I'm sure he didn't consider the margin that they were going to be down by. Yeah. I think at that point, man, just get him
give
a couple
him
series.
Minutes.
Let him go in there and hand off. Let him get his feet wet and acclimated to the National Football League.
The other side of it is, was there anything to be gained at that point?
Yeah, experience. Isn't it? No, I mean,
is that experience that's going to? I mean, the argument would be, is that experience that can help? I sort of agree that intrinsically you're looking at it going, why not? At that point, why not? You know, at that point, maybe they look at it and say, we don't want to break from our plan when there's this much pressure, when it's this chaotic.
We want to throw them into that chaos. And I get that. I do, but I would go on the other side.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I'm right. Because if you
it's hard to argue not putting them in that late situation, but they clearly had a plan that they had said, we're not going to do that even if X happens.
We had a lot of people saying Gus Bradley ought to be this, that, and the other thing, taken to the woodshed because what are they doing throwing the football anyway, putting Allen Hurns in a position where he can get hurt in a meaningless stretch of game. Well, if you feel that way, then don't ever ask for Blake Bortles to come in garbage time to get some reps because – at that point, the game's over, right? I mean, Allen Hurns needs experience, too. It stinks when you're in that position and you get a guy hurt in what amounts to meaningless action in a 16-game season. And I know they'll say nothing's meaningless. They're all teaching opportunities. That's great. But the reality of it is this team needs playmakers, and it can't afford to get any hurt. And that's why it really stunned me. What is Kerrigan doing on the field in the fourth quarter? If I'm Washington, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Yeah,
right.
We blew week one, but now we're rolling. We're going to have a great season. That's the mindset. That's how quickly it can change.
Yeah, especially leading, it was surprising.
It's shocking.
And I was in here watching the game with you, obviously, as we were getting ready to do the post game, Mike. And look, I made my feelings very much known on when Blake Bortles should have come into that game. And in the fourth quarter, I don't see a reason not to do it. And, you know, you pointed out, well, Kerrigan and Arakpo are still out there. And I said, all the better. Let him go out there against Kerrigan and Arakpo and let him know what it feels like when you only have a second and a half, 2 seconds to get that ball out of your hand and make a decision. I don't see an issue with that if this is a guy that you're planning on developing for the future. Give him an opportunity to know what it feels like. He's not learning what that is watching Chad Henne go through it. There's nothing to be gained there.
All right, let's go to Rich up next on the line, 641-1010. Good morning, Rich.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm a first-time season ticket holder. I'm very excited about the season. But as of yesterday, you know, it had me leaving a lot more questions than answers. And I guess one question that probably should be asked is, with that offensive line being so, you know, bad, is it possible that someone, hey, picks up the phone, calls to Richie Incognito and say, hey, where's your head and where's your mind at, and can you play for us?
I suppose anything's possible. I don't think it's going to happen, if that's what you're asking. John, what about you? Inclination that this
I understand the question. I would be shocked if that happened. And, you know, that's just because that doesn't seem to be a direction that any team in the league wants to go right now, and I don't see the Jaguars want to go that way.
David Garrard, who was a teammate of Richie Incognito's in Miami for a brief period of time, said he didn't think he'd be a good fit here. That's his opinion. He said, you know what, game day, you learn to get along with Richie and all that. You wouldn't want to spend a minute with him outside of the locker room. I think that's a fair representation of what Dave has said.
Yeah, he said you don't go hang out with Richie.
No, he's not.
Which is strikingly like our relationship, Mike.
Exactly.
I couldn't help but think
this is game
about
day
you and me.
For
this
you and I.
Day. Let's go.
Right here. Let's do this. Let us go to David up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, David.
Hey, Mike. Sorry.
What's up?
Well, first of all, I'm going to take this from a different approach, and that is that, you know, I have a family of four. I spend about $300 just to get to the game. That doesn't include, you know, food and stuff and things like that. I understand, you know, that when you buy season tickets that, you know, that there's a risk that you're going to lose, you know, I mean, that's the bottom line. But to see the game yesterday was just so disheartening. You know, you really start questioning yourself as a fan. Is this really worth it? You know, I mean, candidly, you want to support the Jags because you live in Jacksonville. You know, you want to protect the bank, quote unquote. But the bottom line is they have to put out a product. And yesterday, it was just disgraceful. They made Dan Snyder and the Washington Redskins look like a Super Bowl team. It was unbelievable, and it's just a tragedy. And I'll listen to your response off air. Thank you.
All right, thanks. You know, sorry you feel that way. I don't feel it's my job to tell anybody. I've never told any individual person how they should feel about,
right,
you know, what that's your prerogative to do whatever. I'm a season ticket holder myself. All right, despite the fact I don't need to be, I do it because I want to support the team. And you know, so my wife and my son usually use my tickets, or I give them away. I want them to come and have a fun time and a fun experience as well. You know, I'm not trying to put myself in the long suffering category.
Right.
That's your prerogative, though. I think those are fair questions to ask. I do hope. I mean, because we all want this revitalization to take root on
Absolutely.
The field. There's no question about it. You know, don't think we're not maybe it's the wrong thing to say to some people because we're quote unquote media. We're emotionally invested. We want it to happen. It's fun. When they're good, we remember when they've been good. You know what it's like to cover a good football
team.
It's
far better to be in here, even if it's a loss, to be talking about a 7-6 team that just blew one, and now they've got to win three straight. That's what everybody wants. They're not there. And, you know, I get asked on Twitter all the time, don't you care about the fans? Don't you care about this? Yes. You know, I never criticize fans for caring, for asking questions, for doing that sort of thing. But I also will always say that coaches and GMs can't make decisions based on those reactions. But I never say that fans shouldn't have the feeling. I mean, if I'm a fan, I am driving around this morning going, what in the world?
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, let's bang it out. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Excuse me. As on this date, 1961, Dan Marino born, Hall of Famer. 1940, going back even further, Merlin Olsen, another NFL Hall of Famer, and probably a would-be one-day Hall of Famer, Will Shields, born on this date in 1971. 14 years in the NFL for Will Shields. Never missed a game on the offensive line.
It's pretty good.
He is probably technically a free agent. Any thought whatsoever to Will Shields? He was a pretty dominant blocker in his day. No?
Give him a call.
A little too
is
old?
Is he in Utica?
He's on the tractor somewhere right now.
Can he at least come in for a lecture on offensive line communication?
Perhaps.
You know?
He's available. And also, happy birthday, Ernest Biner and Dexter Carter. Dexter Carter, I think, settled in Jacksonville, ultimately. A bunch of birthdays on this date in football history, plus the third American Football League. I can't keep it straight anymore, Tony. Debuted in 1940 with Milwaukee knocking off Columbus 14-2. And Columbus coach was heard to say, we need to take these wounds and turn them into wisdom after the game. And take this pain, turn this frown upside down, and just get better. Look in the mirror. Every individual on that Columbus outfit needed to get a lot better after the 14-2 drubbing at the hands of Milwaukee back in 1940 on this date in football history. Brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway with the Stop Snoring Mouth Guard. If you try it, you'll wonder why you haven't. Years ago, 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Ray Rice is expected to appeal his indefinite suspension today, claiming that he has been penalized twice for the same offense since the league originally gave him a 2-game suspension, later gave him the indefinite suspension. He is about to begin serving. Week 2 injury roundup, and it's a big one. Redskins quarterback Robert Griffin III has a dislocated ankle. His teammate Sean Jackson's shoulder injury has been classified as an AC joint sprain. Chiefs running back Jamal Charles is going to have an MRI done on his injured ankle after the x-rays came back negative, so that's at least some good news on the x-rays, but who knows how much time he may have to miss. Bengals wide receiver A.J. Green left the game in the first quarter with an apparent foot injury that was originally thought to be turf toe, now being classified as a ligament strain. Chargers running back Ryan Matthews left the game in the fourth quarter with a reported MCL sprain. 49ers tight end Vernon Davis left last night's game against the Bears in the fourth quarter with an apparent ankle injury. He was on crutches in the locker room after the game. Dolphins running back Knowshon Moreno dislocated his elbow and is expected to be out at least 4 weeks, and that's just the offensive skill positions as far as injuries around the National Football League. That and then include guys like Gerald McCoy, who broke his hand, among others that were injured across the league yesterday. And week two wraps up tonight with the Jaguars' AFC South rival, if you can call them that still. Indianapolis Colts playing their home opener against the Philadelphia Eagles. The Houston Texans now 2-0 on the young season. The Titans 1-1 after the loss to the Cowboys yesterday. The Colts lost in Denver last Sunday. They are a 3-point favorite against the Eagles tonight on Monday Night Football.
The Texans were the worst team in the league last year.
Yes, they were.
They earned the first pick in the draft last year. They have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's every bit the journeyman quarterback that Chad Henne is. Now, they've got certainly a few playmakers, but that's who they have. They had them last year for the most part. And they went out and they held this Washington team to 6 points last week. 6 points last week, and their quarterback was healthy. And their number one wide receiver was healthy, and Pierre Garçon was catching 10 passes in that football game. It boggles the mind. I mean, the level of you're not going to win every game, but the lack of competitiveness against what is at best a middle of the pack Washington team.
I do think the loss of RG3 in the game might have helped Washington. After watching the tape last week of what they were doing, look, they had a lot of short routes, obviously, because of the pass rush that Houston was able to get at them. But RG3 holds the ball way too long. I mean, way too long. And even the sack that they gave up while RG3 was on the field yesterday, that was RG3 just standing in the pocket waiting to get hit.
But the
Ryan
game
Davis.
Plan had changed. I mean, it was clear.
It had.
I mean, they went read option right off the jump. Mm-hmm. They got him outside the pocket. They got him throwing on the move. And I thought he actually was off to a decent start yesterday.
I did, too. But when Cousins came into the game, it was he hit that back foot, ball out.
I got you.
That's how he was playing.
Maybe it did help, but it wasn't the difference in a 31-point loss. You know?
No.
I got this text in right now. You can text, again, 904-641-1010. We should have, or the Jags should have, an O-line blitz come protect the quarterback. It's just going to show up. Put on a number in the 70s. And
good one.
We'll get you a good one, he says. I thought it was a good one, actually. Let's go back to the line, 641-1010. Kurt, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. How are you?
I'm good, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
From, I guess, a big fan perspective, I don't see the zone scheme for our offensive line as being the right fit for what we need to do. I see Toby as not the shifty back that can hit those cutback lanes. I see him more of as kind of a power guy. And anybody that watches tape knows that on our zone scheme play action, we don't block defensive ends. And that, to me, is setting a non-mobile quarterback like Chad Henne up for failure. I don't know, just kind of my perspective. What do you guys think?
All right. What do you think, Osh?
Hard to argue right now. I mean, but I don't know that it's realistic to think they're going to change the approach midstream. I don't know that you change your offensive coaching philosophy after two games.
I've got to believe they feel that Toby Gerhardt's skill set fits what they do because they went out and targeted him specifically.
I think it fits what they do if they block it better. I mean, so
okay.
It kind of goes back to it. I mean, again, I did not watch the tape, but I was sitting next to Jeff as he did last night. And he said there's a couple of plays where if one block gets made, then you get a chance to run downhill a little bit. Now, he did not say that the entire game was about one guy missing a block here or there. But he said there were times on some stretch plays that it looked like if one block gets made, then things start going a little better on that play. You know, and that's usually what it is with his own blocking scheme. So I just I don't know that I can disagree with the caller. That's the way it looks right now. But I don't know that they're going to change midstream.
641-1010, is it Jock up next here on 1010XL? Good morning, how are you?
Oh, hi. What I wanted to call about is say that what Bradley should do now is just start Bortles and show the fans just how lousy this guy is. I mean, he was a Division III quarterback in college.
All right, thank you, Jock. He was not a Division III quarterback in college, but appreciate you weighing in with that scouting report.
Here we go, Jocks.
Jocks. Right. Jock wants Blake for a completely different reason than everyone else. Let's expose this fraud.
Go
this
big
Division
or go
three
home,
fraud.
Right?
Right there.
He just came right in.
Good job, Jock. All right. Let's see. Where are we going next here? 6-4-1-10-10. MJ, you're next up on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. How are you?
Hey, how are you? Hey, I just have my own little opinion about, incognito. You know, coaches used to, they had this little mindset where they'd be, you know, hey, he hasn't ever played for me. Let's give him a shot. They don't do that with all this NFL, you know, how they are now. What I was saying, though, couldn't you imagine back in the day, back when we were kids, and if Don Shula was to cut incognito, he would be a Raider before it got dark. It's just, I think with the NFL correctness, how they want to do everything, the political correctness, he ain't going to get a shot.
Yeah, I don't think he is either. Not here, anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, look.
I can't speak for all 32, but I don't think he gets it here.
Right. And maybe after the season goes by and that story, it becomes, the 10th most offensive story currently running in the National Football League.
Which is on its way.
I mean, they're doing a good job of trying to push that one down the line. I mean, I guess that's the one small solace. Not that any, so when you lose 41-10, there's not really any solace for the fans, because who cares what other fans are going through.
Right.
But you could be up in Minnesota where you just got blasted, albeit 1-1, but you just got blasted and you're dealing with the Adrian Peterson situation, or, you know, any of these other situations going on around the National Football League right now. At least that is not happening right here. This Duval Doom tweets, when we were talking about the Texans shutting down Washington, at least in all caps, so I guess he's yelling this emphatically, the Texans' number one draft pick played, though, Mike. Right. Okay, he played about half the game or whatever it was he played, but if Blake Bortles played, was he going to stop the Redskins from scoring the 41 points? I guess he would have extended all the drives, right, and therefore the Redskins would have no time to score all those points. So the point being, the Jaguar defense gave up 41 points to the same group that the worst team in the NFL last year held to 6. That was my point.
Sure.
Whether Blake Bortles is in an extensive drive or two, and they give up 31 points, the defense gave up way too much yesterday, had nothing to do with whether or not Blake Bortles or Chad Henne was on the field, in my opinion, because it wasn't just all, and I get 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, you're wearing the defense out. They had 21 points at the half, and I understand there are a lot of 3 and outs in the first half. Should the defense in week 2 of the National Football League season be worn out midway through the second quarter? No matter how long they played on the field that day.
No.
I don't think so.
And that's, again, that's the overriding theme of yesterday to me, is the defense did not do what you thought it would do, and that needs to be a one-game issue, because the hope that you had for improvement this season and for tangible stuff going right on the field, I didn't have a big hope that the offense was going to be explosive consistently all season. But you had a hope that, especially up front, that this was going to be a defense that would be stout, that would be deep, that'd be able to rotate guys, and that the first half of that game wouldn't happen.
Yeah, right. And they were playing a Redskins team that it felt like was trying to figure out what they were.
Mm-hmm.
This team hadn't won in a very long time. I really thought it was going to be a sloppy contest between two pretty mediocre NFL teams in that game yesterday. And one team was really sloppy, and the other team wasn't. I mean, the Jags and the busts on defense that continue to happen in the run and pass game, I never thought we would see this from this Jaguar defense. You're right, John. It's the biggest disappointment of the first 2 weeks of the season, that they've been that bad on defense.
It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories is Wild West Guns and Gold, whether it's revolvers, semi-autos, rifles, shotguns, sporting arms, you name it, Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA. Guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Guns4Jax.com is the website. Guns, the number 4, J-A-X, or visit their shop on Lane Avenue. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor. Here, the number 641-1010. More of your calls straight ahead on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Your home for the best Jags coverage. 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm Jessica Blaylock with your Rubber Meets the Road Play of the Game, brought to you by Big Chief Tire. Exceptional service and family run since 1961. The Jaguars played their first regular season game against the Philadelphia Eagles, and one player that made his presence known on offense was rookie receiver Allen Hurns. Hurns found himself on the receiving end of a 34-yard touchdown pass by Chet Henne to get the Jaguars on the board first.
Play fake this time. Looking down the field, fires it deep. He's got Allen Hurns open. Allen Hurns! Touchdown, Jacksonville. How do you like that? The rookie has scored, and the Jags strike first.
The undrafted free agent rookie out of Miami finished the day with four receptions for 110 yards total and two touchdowns, and was also responsible for your Big Chief Tire Rubber Hits the Road play of the game. Big Chief Tire, for all your tire and service needs. Four convenient locations throughout the Jacksonville area.
It's a 1010XL 92.5 FM Jaguars Ticket Blitz. Call 633-2000 now. Come protect the bank.
Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Glad you're along. Foundation Professionals of Florida going to give away a pair of tickets later this week to the home opener. Hope you're planning to come out. And you know what? 0-2, it's looking bleak right now. But for one day, the home record is spotless, right? They haven't lost a home game yet. They've got the Colts. We can rip the Colts' hearts out. We can get right back in. You don't think Houston's going to continue to win at this pace, do you? Come on.
Colts are 0-1. No matter what happens, if you win, you're either tied or ahead of them, right?
Exactly. So the Jags are encouraging you to come out and protect the house this week. Later this week, Foundation Professionals of Florida will give you a chance to pick up a free pair of tickets if you entered one of their photo contests on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. All the finalists will go into a drawing later this week. Foundation Professionals recognizes the fans as the foundation of the organization. Likewise, they recognize that a healthy foundation is key to protecting your most important investment, your home. They'll give you the peace of mind that your home is safe, licensed and insured. Call them at 287-2690, foundationprosfl.com online. In fact, later on this morning, we may be giving away a pair of ducats to that game coming up. And when I say may, I think we will.
We will.
Be doing that.
They can't tell you not to. They can't take that away from you.
They can, but I'm going to do it anyway, Johnny. Got this. I got it. So many of these tweets coming in from John Scoodluck is how I'm going to pronounce it. He said, please check out the Seattle 2010-2011 season scores. They lost games by lots of points in the building process. Mm-hmm. Big difference to me is each of those years they were 7-9.
Right.
Okay. They were competitive. In fact, one of those 7-9s won the division. Mm-hmm. So they were.
I think they were 5-11 one of the years. I thought
in 2010 and 2011, I just checked the record.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Both of those years, 7-9 each season,
okay.
And they had some ugly losses, mm-hmm, along the way, but it wasn't week in, week out, and they won almost half their games each of those seasons. Those were the building block seasons, and they may have had a 5-11 prior to that.
Yeah, I thought sure.
You know, there's a far,
right,
cry to me, at least at this point, and we don't know what the rest of the season is going to bring. They have 14 more games. But, and I understand that it's a new regime, but this is where the franchise has been. Two wins, mm-hmm, four wins, and off to a start that is reminiscent of that four-win season at best last year.
No, so, it's tough. And, you know, I think the fans who follow this team closely still have an idea that there are building blocks in place. The problem is the people who don't follow it closely, they look at it, 41-10. There's no way to sit there and say that game was good, that it was about getting better. That, you know, it just wasn't. So it's something that needs to not happen again.
All right, where are we going? Let's try Jim, I believe, next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I do have to question your judgment, though, Michael, and no offense to your sponsor.
No, go ahead.
But encouraging the fans to take up firearms right now is probably not a good idea. Ha. But anyway.
Now, lest someone hear you and think you are painting an accurate picture of me, I am talking about responsible home defense and personal safety. Thank you very much.
Well,
all
right. Monday.
All right. What I called about, the concern I had about yesterday's game, and this happened in the other game, is our secondary, you know, last year excused a lot of it because a lot of rookies, guys had not played together. These guys have been together. and you know, for now 2 years. And I'm sitting here going, and so many miscommunications. I mean, I just don't get this. I mean, it's, you know, you've got the basically, forget about the defensive line, but our linebackers are pretty much the same except for Kelvin Smith. And you know, Alan Ball and Will Blackman, you know, Gratz, all of them have been here before. And they're, I mean, I can't believe our safeties are out of position more often than not. And how does a fullback get wide open? I still don't understand that one either. So, anyway, that's my biggest concern. You know, I just cannot understand it for the life of me.
All right, thank you, Jim.
See, I think in that area, that's where Sipp's loss really hurts, obviously. I mean, it's obvious he's a very good safety. But I can't sit here on the air today and say that Jonathan Siprin being out is the entire reason I lost that game 41-10. But I do think he is big in terms of communication back there, in terms of being in the right spot. He is important on that level.
By the way,
without question,
I thought the first referee review was blown in the Jaguars' favor. I thought DeSean Jackson caught that ball. I watched it on replay several times. I mean,
there's so much now, though, that it's gotten to the point where if you don't hang on to that ball, even to hand it to the ref, they're going to figure out a way to call that incomplete in that situation.
You watched Sunday Night Football last night? Did you see the first touchdown to Crabtree?
No.
That to me was less complete than the one to DeSean Jackson.
Yep.
And that stood. You're right. It is very difficult to discern.
I wasn't shocked when the call went that way. Intrinsically, from a gut feel, you just felt like it was a complete pass.
And
that's sort of the problem with the rule right now. And it's one that the NFL tries really hard to take any sort of judgment out of the equation on plays like that. It's why there's no more push-out rule. They just try to make it to where you don't have to interpret as an official. You still have to. And, again, it didn't surprise me that they didn't call it, but it did not feel right.
All right, let's go back to the line, 641-1010. Frank, you are up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. At the beginning of the season, I told my friends I thought we'd win 4 games again. And of course, I was chastised because kind of my reasoning was I didn't see where we improved the club that much to improve on the 4-win record. And what I mean is our number one pick is sitting on the bench, which I understand. And the other position, the players that we got were players that were let go by other teams that didn't want them back. And not that they were bad players, but it wasn't a big enough improvement for us to win more than 4 games.
Okay. I mean, that's your prerogative. I mean, you may turn out to be right. You may still turn out to be wrong.
Well, I didn't completely disagree with that theory, which is why I was not saying that this would be a 9-7, 10-6 push for the playoff team. Because there was still a feel when you drafted Blake Bortles. I think eventually Aaron Colvin's going to help this team, but he was clearly not drafted to help this year. They used a 4th-round pick there with the idea that he will eventually be a starter in the secondary. When you made moves like that, and as he said, some of these free agents were brought in to make them a deeper team, but it was not like they went out and when they get a Dakota Watson, that's not a front-line, front-level guy who's going to completely move you up in terms of your talent level at that position. He should make you better. He should be playing better than he has been. But I didn't get the feeling that this was a, hey, we're building to build right now. That's not what they're going to do. It's still draft and develop. And Blake and Aaron and those guys, they're still about the future and not about the first 4 weeks of the season.
Granted, but at the same time, they're a 4-win team.
I didn't expect yesterday. I'm not saying I expected that.
No, I guess that, but they come in as a 4-win team, right, from last year. And maybe we're close to the situation. It's tough to look at things mm-hmm. completely objectively, but same at quarterback, stayed the same, right? Didn't change. You hope you get an upgrade at running back,
right?
Because you went out and you targeted a guy. You hope you're going to get a full season of Luke Jokel, you think. Plus you went out and signed Beatles. Plus you added Linder. You think the offensive line is going to be better. To what degree? You don't know. The pass rush, which certainly showed up for the first half of the first game, you think is going to be better. I mean, there's enough pieces there to say, all right, 5 or 6 wins, and mm-hmm. then an overall competitive level being raised.
Absolutely.
And that's
what wasn't yesterday. And
correct.
Again, we go back to the thing we've been hitting on. That's what was disturbing about the defense having that period in the first half especially where they were just running and doing what they wanted to do, and you felt like you were playing uphill, that's what you didn't expect to feel with the off-season moves.
Let's go to Jason next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, guys. Hey, I wanted to ask a question, and after I make a statement, you know what disheartens me the most? And I don't envy Gus Bradley. I know he's in a tough spot trying to rebuild this team with an impatient fan base that's kind of had been kicking his teeth over the years. But I don't know what difference Blake Bortles would make. I mean, there's no way to tell. And I think ultimately they'll make some changes and see what happens and then go from there. But, I knew there was going to be growing pains in offense. But when I look at defense from Clemens and Miller and across the line, even the linebackers and in the secondary, I just don't see any gaping holes. And how they played yesterday just baffled me. It was just, guys running wide open. I think Grotz has got left that fullback wide open. And then he had a couple of plays that I just expected more out of him. And I just, the defense baffles me. But what I wanted to ask was, what are some of the young guys that you think might get a chance? I think some of the obvious ones are, or Bowanko or somebody like that. But what about the Josh Wells kid? Will he get a shot? Will Ryan Davis possibly get a start? I know it's tough to put Clemens down, but he didn't play good at all yesterday. I was just going to ask, who are some of the guys that could possibly get a shot or at least be active?
Yeah, I don't know that there's that many that are going to make that kind of an impact. Josh Wells, I don't see starting. They're trying to get Pastor back this week, which would be the change that you would see on the offensive line.
Boy, if they run the ball at all this week, if I'm Austin Pastor, I'm holding out in week four.
Oh, yeah.
I want a new contract.
He's coming in the next day.
What's the difference between the first two and last week?
Rubbing the fingers together. On the defensive front, I get the feeling you might see more Dakota Watson. Again, it's not a plug-and-play league that way in terms of, you're not going to come in and say, okay, we're starting these four or five new guys, and you're playing
you're
the guys you
deep.
Feel like you're best. Right.
No one is that deep in the National Football
right.
League to be able
it's
to
not like there's a bunch of guys on the bench who the coaches have been saying, you know what, this guy is better, but I'm going to play this guy.
I'm going to hold him back.
Yeah.
Right.
So I understand the inclination to want to change, but it's really not a situation where there are hiding guys for the sake of hiding guys.
I think a case like Ryan Davis, I think part of the reason why he has been as effective as he is because he's part of that rotation, right?
And he's very good as an inside pass rusher when he gets on a guard. And he's good in that role. And then the argument becomes, well, you take him out of that role that he's really good at and put him in
as the defensive end lining up over the
tackle.
Then
all of a sudden you're taking away a place where you're strong. So that's the reason you don't automatically see this guy. Okay, he's got two sacks. Let's put him on the outside. Well, if he's better at where he is, then I don't know that you should make that kind of a move. I don't think Chris Clemens is going to be on the bench.
For a Washington team, though, that ran almost 90 snaps yesterday, Ryan Davis was on the field for 18. That number feels a little bit low to me for a guy that has been as productive as he's been when he's had the opportunity to be on the field for 2 weeks. And again, situationally, they weren't in a lot of pass rush situations throughout that game. So that's why that number is as low as it was. And I keep having to remind myself, and I get it from the fans' perspective, look, this is year 7 of a rebuild for the fans. It's year 2 for Gus and Dave. So their perspective on what's going on in Jacksonville is completely different from the fan base. I would never call this fan base impatient.
Not
They've
at
been
all.
As patient as they could possibly
that's
be with this.
Great
thing.
Point.
I mean, it's year 7 for these guys.
Right. And, I mean, how long are you supposed to wait in the NFL?
Right.
You look at Houston already. I mean, Houston went from division favorites to worst team in the league. Did they start the season 2-0? Now, will that last?
When you're approaching the build the way this team has, which is that they are determined to make their biggest impact through the draft because that's the longest term, that's the best long-term way to do it. When you approach it that way, you're going to have some times like this, which is still early in the process. You're going to have some times like this where the expectations are bigger than your reality. And that's where it is right now, which I'm not knocking the expectations. I understand it. I didn't expect yesterday to happen that way. But they're still young and they're still developing and it's still going to take time.
All right, let's go back to the phones, get one more in before we break. John the Baptist has been holding patiently. Hello, John.
Yo, what's going on, man?
What's up?
All right, so check it out. I'm going to just throw this out there now. If you guys were, just making a team, running back, who would you pick? Toby Gerhardt or Denard Rocker?
I don't know how you answer that. There's no holes for either one of them. I'd probably pick Toby, to be honest with you. Who would you pick? You'd obviously, I'm assuming you'd pick Denard.
I would have to.
Why?
Prime reason I would say with Denard is he gives me something to be threatened. Like, his speed, in my opinion, and his ability to be able to shift. I mean, granted, I know he's not up there like, you know, Chris Johnson or Jamal Charles. But he can get to that point if he's developed.
Maybe. I mean, look, again,
I see the argument there.
I know what he's saying. Sure.
This is a guy that when he's on the field, he's dangerous enough to score from anywhere.
They don't have much of that.
Right. And it's difficult to see him as an every down guy, though, at this point.
So that's sort of the problem. I'm not saying Toby Gerhardt certainly hasn't done much, but again, what holes are there for him? What is there for him to do other than push the pile to try to get back to the line of scrimmage? And he's probably playing at significantly less than 100%.
I was surprised that the running game didn't take a little bit of a tick up from Philadelphia yesterday. That was another disappointment.
It took a step back.
Sure.
Yeah. Really, really, really poor. But look, I'm not arguing that Toby's this great high. He hasn't achieved anything here in Jacksonville. Neither has Denard, though. I'm more inclined to agree with you. And again, goes back. Coaching staff sees these guys every single day. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're trying to hold back Denard Robinson. They think they've got the secret weapon. They're looking for ways to use him. Right now, they don't feel anything they call, I think, in the running game is going to be very successful. And you look at that yesterday, you almost hope this is one of those you just throw that one away.
Yeah.
And it's just so much an aberration from what you're going to see the rest of the year. Because, John, it's not just about why was this guy out of position? Why did this guy not cover this guy? The actual physical act of tackling. Guys were in position to make tackles.
And that's what really baffled, talking to Pozlesny after the game, that's what really baffled him. What was, you know, he said the tackling was poor, the defensive effort was poor, very stand-up in this situation. And he said he really couldn't figure out why. Really surprised. And they did not expect that.
All right, 641-1010. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll look at some of your response to the fan feedback question today, asking you whether you are questioning for the first time, perhaps, the front office and coaching staff, and whether the ones to get you to the promised land. It's brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. We'll be back in a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jacksonville Sharks, and Jacksonville University. You're listening to Jaguars Today on the home of the Jags. 1010XL, 92.5 FM. You know the player. Now meet the man. Sideline Stories with Jessica Blaylock. Brought to you by North Florida Plumbing.
Jaguars linebacker Paul Pozlesny led Jacksonville in tackles last season. He also ranked second in the NFL in that same statistical category. But did you know that Pozlesny didn't like country music until he moved to Jacksonville?
I'm a big country music fan. It just started when I got down here to Jacksonville. I never listened to it before that, but now I love it.
Pozlesny had a chance to go to the Country Music Superfest held right here in Jacksonville. Here's which act he enjoyed the most.
I really, really enjoyed Eric Church. I thought he was great. I love his songs.
Pozlesny will represent the defense as a team captain this season for the Jaguars, as voted upon by his teammates. That's your Sideline Story, brought to you by North Florida Plumbing. For all of your plumbing needs, give North Florida Plumbing a call at 904-450-5774. That's 904-450-5774.
The 1010XL 92.5 FM Jaguars Ticket Blitz.
This is Coach Gus Bradley here on the home of the Jaguars, 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Call 633-2000. Come protect the bank.
First today, coming back here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. We are glad you're along with us. We're in this together. Look, I got my tickets too. I'm ready. I want them to win. We all want them to win. And with that, Jags are hoping against hope that you'll put aside the bad feelings for the first couple weeks. And if you haven't picked up your tickets, you give them that one more shot. See if we can create that home field environment with the largest scoreboards in the world in games that actually matter for the first time. If nothing else, cast your eyes to the north end zone and see what's happening poolside. All right.
It was interesting week four of the preseason.
It
no
certainly
doubt.
Was. Tickets are going. You can get yours at jaguars.com/tickets or call 633-2000. Coming up, your chance.
Thanks
to
for
score
the Metallica, by the way, Lauren. I need
You're welcome,
that.
Tony.
What was that? Crazy, something crazy.
Stone Cold Crazy. It's their Queen cover.
Crazy. The Jags have driven Lauren crazy today.
Well, I mean, after the first half against the Eagles, when you're riding high, thinking we're seriously going to be 2-0, we can totally beat the Redskins. And then we collapsed. 2-0. Yes,
16-0
I just. 16-0. Exactly. All right, right. I wasn't sure. All right, I wasn't sure about going out west to San Diego. So, but still, you're riding high, and it's so exciting, and you're jumping up and down, and you have happy tears, and it's just unbelievable, and you're singing the praises of Dave Caldwell, and then. The defense collapsed and the offense collapsed. And then yesterday there was never any offense or defense and it was just miserable, you know? And so now I'm crazy.
What about the Chargers? Chargers has punched, Seattle in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
After blowing it to Arizona. Arizona's 2-0 now, playing with their backup quarterback yesterday. But that's it. You're going to lose some in the National Football League. You're going to have your bad weeks. Come back the next week and look like a team that can go toe-to-toe with the best team in the league.
Sure.
Like the San Diego Chargers.
And now Seattle gets to go back home to play Denver. How fun is that going to be?
That is going to actually be fun. That's in Seattle?
It's in Seattle.
That's going to be interesting. It's not going to be, you know, yesterday was kind of like the worst-case scenario. You play that game 100 times. It's about as bad as the Redskins are going to beat the Jaguars, right? And that's kind of similar to me, the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Play that game 100 times. That's the worst Seattle will ever beat the Denver Broncos. Everything fell into place for them yesterday. The difference is you look back and you say, wow, that's a record-setting offense. They still have Peyton Manning and all these other guys to fall back on. And they picked up pretty much where they left off last year. Today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asked you, you know, based on the first couple weeks, are you questioning the regime for the first time, the front office, the coaching staff, Tony?
We got a bunch of response. I'll go through a handful of them here. At Irish Jaguar, I think yesterday was the first time I thought, what the hell are they doing? Things need to change. Hashtag Jaguars Today from Jeff. Starting to question the process. Hashtag Jaguars Today from ND. A little bit. Just seems we are not in the right position out there. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Hashtag we look lost. Hashtag halftime adjustments from Clinton. Yes, defensive scheme is lousy. The offensive line has no skill. Hashtag Jaguars Today from Ben. Absolutely. How can you not question Caldwell and Bradley at this point? Inferior at every position yesterday. Hashtag Jaguars Today from Eric. No, I think they're fine. It's the players' fault for yesterday. Do need better O-line players, though. Hashtag Jaguars Today from John. I still have the faith. Players play. Coaches coach. We lost because they did not execute. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Hashtag young team. I mean, and I'm telling you, we probably got 30, 35 responses to it today, but wanted to give you the mix of the good and bad from the fan base.
Let's see if I can read this hashtag here. Oh, look, hashtag Jaguars last year and the year before and the year before. Mm-hmm. I think that's saying another way of saying same old Jags, which we'd hope that one had been buried for a while. Luis Osorio, yes, it has made me question. Last year we said it couldn't get any worse than the prior year with Malarkey, and it did, arguably the worst team in NFL history, and this year in game two, already reaching new lows. Worst O-line and running game, hashtag Jaguars Today. Hashtag God help us, hashtag I want to wake up from this nightmare, John. That's the depths that some of the folks have fallen into in terms of despair. The Tom Bush Family Dealerships brings you the Fan Feedback Spotlight, and you can check them out at Tom Bush Motors on Twitter. And certainly TomBush.com as well for Tom Bush Volkswagen, Mazda, BMW, and Mini. They bring you the Fan Feedback Spotlight every day. Let's get a few more phone calls in before we close up today. Let's go to Joey next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Joey.
Good morning, guys. Rough day for a ticket blitz, huh?
Well, you know, it's not the best circumstance, certainly.
Oh man! All right, so I'm a huge fan. I mean, I'm there every week, so I have to find find some positive to pull out of this thing. At least something to look forward to, and it goes along with your question about have you lost faith? Well, to be honest, I think next week after this week's game is a huge one for this because last year there was no expectation. We could have won 2 games last year, 3 games, and we won 4, I think. So, I mean, it wouldn't have mattered because we're a horrible team and you're rebuilding. But this is the first time to me that Gus Bradley has faced real pressure and adversity as a coach to me because even after last week, you kind of saw
man, that first half, there's so many positives. There's a lot of stuff we can see that's positive. Man, we are definitely turning because that was a good first half performance. This week was like a time warp. It felt like week six last year or something. We had not a chance to compete yesterday. So I think this week, what they do with the team, how they prepare them, and how that team looks this week is, to me, enormous in getting the fans' confidence back and getting them back on board, because that was really rough yesterday, guys.
Yeah,
I would agree. I mean, it's not fair to say there wasn't adversity. It was pretty bad coming out of London, and then they had sort of a galvanizing point, and I thought they responded to that well. But I get your point that everything last year seemed like you could always just kind of say, well, it's the first year in their building. So, yes, I say this is the most adversity, and it's a big week to watch how they handle it.
We were tanking for Teddy last year, too. I mean, we had that to go all season long. You know, getting aside.
You 10-10 XL guys.
Hey, you know what? You wait. Keep this up for another 4 weeks, all right?
All right.
Don't think it won't happen again.
It can happen to you, Ozone.
All right. Seriously, though, I mean, last year there was – you knew they were at rock
right.
bottom, and you were hoping for that guy to come in and turn the franchise around, and they hope they have it
mm-hmm.
with the guy that they picked. When is he going to make his debut? I think that's and honestly,
no question, that's a question.
You got the home opener this week, which is hopefully big regardless, okay? And the Colts are coming in, and if they win that game, as dire as it seems right now, it will change your mood dramatically.
It'll scrub off.
Now, you sit here and say, well, how are they possibly going to win that game? I get it. Based on yesterday's performance, I would give them, if they play like that, they're going to beat any team. They're going to beat the Oakland Raiders if they play like that.
I don't know they could have beat any team in the league yesterday.
I agree with that. Let's get Chris in here, under the wire. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hey, guys. Man, Mondays are painful around here.
The last couple of them have been.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to bring up something, and kind of going back in time a little bit here, but when Marino came into the league, the Dolphins had a quarterback system down there they referred to as Woodstrock. I think it was David Woodley and Don Strock. And what Don Shula did with Marino was, you know, again, at garbage time or fourth quarter when the game seemed to be out of reach, they put Marino in there and he'd just start chucking the ball, you know, with no fear of, you know, there's nothing really to lose here. And I think it's time to move to that philosophy. I mean, you can't pick up the speed of the game sitting on the bench. And, you know, I know they're trying to protect him and this and that, but anyhow, I'll just get your thoughts on that.
All right. I'm trying to recall. I remember the Woodstrock system, but
yeah,
that was more of a split
that.
Between Woodley and Strock before Marino got there, as
yeah.
I recall it.
Marino's rookie year, he played fairly quickly. He didn't play right off the bat.
That's what I'm looking for right here, how many games he started his rookie season.
I think it was 10 or 11. He was pretty good by the end, and then he went into 84, and of course, was lights out.
His second year, he threw 40.
Yeah.
It was his second year.
He was starting by the
yards.
End of his rookie season. I remember they had a playoff game where they lost to Seattle that year.
Right. He started 9 games, only appeared in 2 others, so he didn't do that system very much. If he did it much, you know, he obviously appeared in a couple games late, but beyond that, they just threw him in there as a starter. So
now a little different circumstance in that Miami had been to the Super Bowl in
82, yeah,
and he was a rookie in 83, so they drafted him off that. So they had a pretty good team.
They had a
around.
Super Bowl team.
Yeah, I mean it was but all that said, I get your point.
Sure,
you know. You would think at some point you're going to start seeing Blake late, if not earlier.
All right, last one for today on Jaguars Today is going to be Brian. Hello, Brian. How are you?
What's going on, guys?
What's up?
Can it quite be possible that a team goes into their season opener and the season's already lost? And in my opinion, it is, because there's not enough time to have enough practices, meetings, coaching to get the team that I've seen in the last 6 quarters to do any better than what they're going to do. Granted, the first 2 quarters were good, but they had the big plays in offense. That was it. The only way that that's going to happen is if you bring Morpheus and Neo from the Matrix and you plug that thing into their brain and program them. Other than that, these guys look lost and they have no clue as what they're doing, and they're not going to get any better over the next few weeks, period. It's going to take months for these guys to get better.
Well, I mean, if that's they certainly can't take that attitude, and you know, they've got to try to improve immediately, you know, and as difficult as that may seem. And John, we talked about there's not, Calvin Johnson's not riding in on the white horse to save your passing offense. So they're limited into, you know, what the high end may be. Doesn't mean they can't get better. They were capable. They played better in that first half against Philadelphia, despite the fact that, yeah, it came on a couple of big plays, but those were plays that were set up by forced turnovers. There was none of that yesterday.
Right.
And that's one other point, and we could belabor a bunch of them. If you're going to get beat by 31, send the freaking house and just disrupt. Don't let Kirk Cousins just sit back there and pick his target. And what's the difference? 51-10, 41-10, to me, maybe you'll pressure him into some mistakes. Maybe you'll create some turnovers. Maybe you'll give yourself some short fields. Maybe even take him back to the house. And you got to find new ways to create points.